This is Mae Brussel, and it's side two of broadcast number 765. The program is World Watchers. There was a brief article in Parade magazine, a comment about Faye Dunaway, who's in London now, and she is acting in Don Freed's play Circe and Bravo. And Harold Pinter, the well-known playwright, has directed the movie, and it's doing very well in London. They described this play that she's doing in Parade as saying she's playing the wife of a U.S. president under the close care of a Secret Service agent. The drama resembles the true life story of the late Martha Mitchell, colorful wife of John Mitchell, attorney general in the Nixon cabinet. Mrs. Mitchell said she was held political prisoner at Newport Beach, California, during the Watergate cover-up because she knew too much. I think the people that have listened to World Watchers for a long time remember that I saw that play in Los Angeles, that Don Freed told me that he had written that play with me in mind because I wrote the article, Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped, in 1972, and Don was the person who set up the conference at the L.A. Press Club and was very helpful presenting that to the various news media around the world who received it with as much clamor as they did Hitler's Mein Kampf. They didn't take that seriously either. I'm very happy that it's doing well, and if Faye Dunaway stays in it, it will go to New York and then hopefully come around to the West Coast also. The important thing about that, that I think at this time, is that Mr. Rehnquist is having the hearings for becoming Justice of the Supreme Court. And in the course of his hearings this past week, the subject came up about his work as Deputy Attorney General under John Mitchell and Robert Mardian, and the plans for a coup in the United States, an overthrow of the United States government, a martial law plan. Now, Mr. Rehnquist is very much against the Constitution. He's voted about 40 or 50 times against, even against all his other partners on the Supreme Court, and he believes the states should have more power than the federal Constitution. He's an anti-constitutionalist. He's a member of the John Birch Society, and he also was part of a team that was planning martial law. That was the gist of my article, Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped? And this plot included G. Gordon Liddy and Egil Crow, the plumbers team that worked with Rehnquist under Henry Kissinger in the White House. Now, Ronald Reagan has refused to release the papers of the martial law plan. Ronald Reagan in California was part of the martial law with his garden plot, with Edwin Meese, the military, tying in to Washington and the takeover and overthrow of the United States government as an elected government. It'll be interesting to see if this any more comes of this. Ronald Reagan absolutely will not release the martial law plan, but Lewis Tackwood was the first person to speak about it in the Los Angeles Police Department in 1971, that a plan was made to overthrow this country, even to kill Richard Nixon, to put Spiro Agnew in power. I did a broadcast on Tom Pappas and the Greek military junta links to the CIA and the martial law plan that was woven together under the power of Pappas working with the Greek military junta and Nazis in Europe and a conduit of our Central Intelligence Agency. Mr. Rehnquist becomes probably the Justice of the Supreme Court, a man who was in charge and wanted the martial law to go through, and Ronald Reagan, who would adore a situation that would create the excuse for his remaining in office. The situation there is ripe, and as I said before, when the Challenger went down, the next Challenger would have had the plutonium, and that would have been an excuse for Reagan to cancel the elections and have the martial law. So it's interesting that Rehnquist is now being challenged about his work with G. Gordon Liddy and Egil Crow and the White House plumbers and the Defense Department in trying to push the martial law plan. It's very dangerous to think how close they are to that event, because the proper people that worked for it 12 years ago are in a position to do it under any given set of circumstances right now. Well, the late Roy Cohn passed away, and I won't do too much about him, just bits and pieces and more next week or the week after, because there's so much coming out about Roy Cohn. One interesting part of Roy Cohn's life was his association with Aristotle Onassis. He worked for Onassis, and Onassis was planning to divorce Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis, and the arrangement was to start the wheels going. She was spending too much money. They weren't sleeping together anyway, etc., etc. And the attorney to represent Onassis in the divorce plan was Roy Cohn. Now, Roy Cohn was on the board of Permandex. His name runs through in and out of the Torbett document, the description of the people behind the murder of John Kennedy. So it's interesting that the widow of John Kennedy marries Onassis, and then a man who's in an organization that whereby is accused of being part of the teamwork that had John Kennedy murdered is the attorney for Aristotle Onassis. A nice little web of relationships that continued from one administration to the other and affected a lot of people in different ways. Roy Cohn was very close to George Steinbrenner. He was attorney. Steinbrenner owns the New York Yankees. Real estate mogul Donald Trump, he's very close to him. He owns the New Jersey general football team. He just helped Trump win a $74 million tax-exempt foundation on his towers just a year or two ago in New York City. Trump really needed a tax exemption of $74 million. It was William Casey who helped Fernand Marcos and Imelda Marcos get off of paying tax on their multi-million dollar property in New York by setting up dummy fronts in Panama. People high up in the administration help us be reduced of taxes that we need in our cities by making sure these people get the maximum from their profits. Roy Cohn had a law partner, Mr. Bolin, who was a Knight of Malta. He is still the partner, still a Knight of Malta. And interestingly enough, this very terribly ugly Jewish courier was a liaison between Cardinal Spellman and J. Edgar Hoover, doing a lot of passing of messages and spying. He also represented, in his lifetime, he's gone now, one of the top family members of the Genovese family, and he was representing the mafia throughout his entire career as an attorney. There was a large arrest in February of 1985. We don't hear much about it. That was Paul Castellano, who was gunned down, and Tony Corallo, Anthony Salerno, and Ginori Langella, and Philip Rostelli. They were all arrested in 1985. Five families and their bosses. There was an article about the Gambino, Lucchesi, Genovese, Colombo, and Bonanno family. Well, Roy Cohn was the attorney for Anthony Fat Salerno, allegedly ran, once headed the Charles Lucky Luciano connection, which was Tom Dewey and Earl Warren and the OSS, Central Intelligence Agency connections, and the Vito Genovese connections. Now, Vito Genovese worked and brought money to a place where a general was, where Jack Ruby was, and the payoffs for what happened in Dallas were taking place just prior to the murder of John Kennedy, not too long before. And interestingly enough, the head of the family, this Genovese family, the attorney for that person when he was arrested in New York recently was Roy Cohn. He has a long history of working with organized crime. There's an article in the San Francisco Examiner that you don't see often in a Hearst paper just last month by Warren Hinkle called Assassination Incorporated. And I want to share that with you because last week I talked about Ronald Reagan's war against drugs and using the military to invade Bolivia, given that it's a democracy now and making it safe later for cocaine and fascism. The article says that the Arctic trails have their secret tales that could make your blood run cold, said Robert Service. But alas, the Nixon administration also is capable of having these same trails that lead to places equally as cold. What John Ehrlichman talked when he steered about the Nixon rehabilitation process wouldn't take place because there would always be new disclosures about Richard Nixon. Johnny with the hatchet, late was Seymour Hersh, the My Lai investigative reporter who originally was talking about the Nixon administration. And in 1972, they considered assassinating General Manuel Antonio Noriega, a Little Caesar in Panama. And now Hersh is bringing this up again and making front page story about the plans of the CIA to kill the president of Panama a few years ago when Nixon was in office. What they actually proposed was the total and complete immobilization of the drug trade-linked general, which was apparently the euphemism for assassination during the Watergate presidency. That is at least an improvement over the coarser terminate with extreme prejudice in vogue during the bloody Camelot years. Hirsch cites a Senate Intelligence Committee report that says officials of the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs, a forerunner of the DIA, considered assassinations as an option. The purity of the post-Watergate period launched an investigation of four known instances of formal and informal assassination plots by federal agencies during the Nixon administration. Hirsch says it could not be learned what the three other assassination plots were. We know about the one planned to kill Fidel Castro. They used exotic weapons and continued this up through the Nixon administration, then on up. It's still going on. It hasn't ended. And he cites the murder of Salvador Allende as being one of those people murdered by the CIA. The U.S. media gave the Cuban allegation, the plans to kill Castro, short rift and paid not too much attention to it. But various people who captured assassins were hired and displayed by the people in Cuba, and our media looked the other way. It wasn't until the CIA's interface with the mafia to murder Castro was revealed that people became concerned. It was okay to murder Castro, and he would show these assassins. But on the other hand, when we hired the mafia to be part of the assassination team, the drug runners, that's pretty bad. And he cites Gary Patrick Hemmings, who was involved in 1971 plot against Fidel Castro, Tony Veciana, a founder of the Cuban exile group of Alpha 66 of the CIA, and he cites the Select Committee on Assassinations. They couldn't prove Veciana's CIA case officer had suspicious ties to Lee Harvey Oswald, Veciana working with the anti-Castro Cubans and not with Fidel Castro. The Senate did reporting on these assassination teams, Hinkle said. The report about Nixon aides considered assassinating the Panama general. Jim Hogan wrote in his book, Spooks, about these assassination plots and about the Drug Enforcement Agency considered deploying an assassination squad of Cuban exiles to kill 150 drug dealers in Latin America. Then a White House would have Chuck Colson and E. Howard Hunt sitting around discussing whether they should drug Jack Anderson. They were capable of anything, he said, except rehabilitation. Assassination has always been and is very much part of the intelligence community and the drug operations, and a lot of people want to ignore that, but it continues, and in the operations that are going on in Bolivia or wherever we send our army, we will be wiping out only a section of those countries to make drug dealing safe for the others. Many of you may or may not know that the agreement of sending the American troops into Bolivia this past week, the past 2 weeks, was that they wipe out 10,000 acres of the cocaine pod or bean or whatever it is, and of the 90,000 acres, 80,000 would remain intact. The agreement was to wipe out 10,000 and leave 80,000 intact. So with all that publicity, we don't intend to stop cocaine coming to the United States. Speaking of drug dealing, assassinations, and the CIA, there's an interesting article about a notorious family in the paper this past week. This had to do with the murder of the parents of Madame New. And the son, her brother, Madame New's brother, an attorney, has been held responsible for killing his parents in Washington. The Los Angeles Times had a story. The son of the exiled former South Vietnamese ambassador to the United States was arrested and charged with murdering his parents. The parents were found in their home. The excuse for death was not immediately known, but the person who did it is pretty well confirmed it was the son. This couple that was murdered, Tran Vong Chung and his wife, Nam Tran Chung, she was also a representative of the United Nations for Vietnam. They were the parents of Madame New, known as the Dragon Lady. Madame New died of the parents died of asphyxiation. The daughter lives in Rome. And the article goes on to describe the family and how Madame New was active as first lady for her brother-in-law, Mr. Diem of Southeast Asia, who was murdered by the Central Intelligence Agency. Now, the Diem administration and Madame New and her parents are devout Catholics. And Madame New is a Catholic, a devout Catholic, and her family were opposed to the Buddhists being killed and setting fire to themselves, and they were more sympathetic to the Buddhist regime. They were sympathetic to the Buddhist clergymen, And Mr. Diem was murdered partly because of a conflict of the Catholics versus the Buddhists, and people refer to the Vietnam War as Cardinal Spellman's War. There was a large role in religion that played down there, and it's playing itself out, I guess, still. And these parents, one was a Confucian and the other a Buddhist. Their daughter was converted to Catholicism, and the Diem administration fell, and Diem and his brother were killed, and she fled abruptly, settling in Italy. Now, when she left this country, she actually moved to Bel Air, and she was just about one block away from where we lived in Los Angeles before I moved to Carmel. And at that time, she was traveling around the country within 30 days after John Kennedy was murdered, saying that the communists killed Kennedy, the same communists that killed my husband and the officials, my brother-in-law down there, the relatives, they were communists that killed them. And she was very vocal about that. And she was a spokeswoman for the Republican Party in Paris. And after she was there a short time, I forget the time sequence, but I have the articles, she said that the Central Intelligence Agency did the killings down there. It wasn't the communists. And then she was disinvited from the Republican nomination parties where she was supposed to speak and return to this country. And she went off in silence, a devout Catholic, and she lived in Paris. And then her daughter, going to the Sorbonne, was murdered, not murdered, she was killed in a car accident. Let's say it was a coincidental accident outside the Sorbonne somewhere in France. And that's when she went into seclusion in Rome and hasn't spoken up since that time. Now, she had an interview this past week, very rare for her. Madame New angrily ends her silence. Madame New gained notoriety during the U.S. involvement in Vietnam, made a rare public statement yesterday about the arrest of her brother in the slaying of her diplomat parents. Madame New, who was President Diem's sister-in-law, said the United States has no right to judge any member of her family, meaning her brother, the Catholic like her who killed the parents. You don't have any right to judge my brother, she said. After what has been done against Vietnam, my country, my people, and my family by the United States, without it ever having contemplated reparation, I don't recognize their right to question and judge any of mine, she said. In the early 60s, as ambassador, her father was ambassador to Washington and mother to the United Nations, Madame New and her father openly clashed over the Diem regime policies. Her husband headed Vietnam's secret police. She served as its first lady and, as I say, was known as the Dragon Lady. She went into exile in Italy after the death of her two brothers, November the 1st, 1963. As I say, to correct it, and whoever wrote the article doesn't have it right, she went into exile after the death of her daughter, but she was seen and heard from for a while, at least a year or two, until she realized that the CIA was involved in these murders. She said she was bitter over the description of herself in the press. She hadn't made any statement in years, but she felt that we had no right to say anything about her brother. He killed her parents, and that's his business, not ours. There's another important article or anniversary this week that might slip the attention of some people because of so much news, but really made very historic changes in the way we perceive people after this event. The event was the murder on the Texas campus, the University of Texas, by Charles Whitman, of 16 people. He killed these people, went up to the tower and shot them, and apparently seemed to be a deranged person from the Vietnam War who got out his anger. He killed his members of his family, and then he went up on top of this 27-story tower and started shooting for an hour and a half or an hour and a quarter. And following him came Richard Speck, who killed 17 days later a group of 8 student nurses in Chicago, and no charges were filed in the Boston Strangler place. He also did a lot of murders right afterwards, but they couldn't find evidence of the Boston Strangler. And the important thing about this Vietnam veteran, who was under the care of psychiatrists before it happened, a few months before the shooting, he was telling a campus psychiatrist that he was going to the tower and start shooting. The politics involved John Connally and Dr. Irwin and Dr. Sweet, who were in Boston and later linked up with a member of the Central Intelligence Agency, Jolly West. And John Connally suggested that they take part of Whitman's brain and test it. And this was the beginning of testing the brains to see the causes of violence. not whether the psychiatrist had talked him into it, but it was a way to extend the mind control programs that took place under Adolf Hitler with the psychiatrist and link violence to brain disease and thereby the necessity to change and study the brains of people given a set of circumstances. And then these doctors wanted to get the brains of black people during the riots in Detroit after Martin Luther King was killed in 1968, and they have just recently come out with reports, a whole series of new reports on violence and the brain. Actually, they couldn't find anything in Whitman's brain, and later it was missing, but they used this event as excuse for what would begin a large suspicion or rounding up of minorities under the guise that there's something in their brain that's different than other people. Now, the New York Times had a story this past week, July 23rd. Black doctors urged to look for violent signs in patients. Not members of a Madam News family, and certainly not all these Klan and Nazi terrorists that are all white in the Aryan nations, and the murders that they want to do by stringing people across the country and cutting their throat. They're telling the blacks to look into their own people for homicidal feelings. And I haven't updated with you a lot of articles on mind control, psychosurgery, electric machines again to put on the brains. They're bringing a lot of this back, and they're telling them to look at the blacks while people like Mr. Whitman, he was a person in the service who had no problems and no mental problems, and he was an Eagle Scout and a devout Christian, and just like Charles Watson came from Texas, and he was an Eagle Scout and a devout Christian, and comes to Beverly Hills and then begins to join a group known as the Manson family where he does these killings. Charles Manson was never in the home. But the Whitman story, going back in the past years, was the sounding off or the study of minorities when Whitman was a white man and transferred the event to study. Interestingly enough, the Boston Strangler was white and Speck was white and so forth. But they transferred it to the necessity of working on minorities, Indians, Chicanos, and Mexicans, and the mind control program escalated tremendously after this operation. And John Conley from Texas was a member of the Permandex organization, along with Roy Cohn, described in the Torbett document and many other places of his role behind the assassination of the President of the United States, whereby a coup literally took place in this country. And Conley was very active with the psychologists in turning the Whitman event into something that became a future tool of repression in the minds of the doctors and psychologists around the country. One brief item about Ronald Reagan, and many of you saw it on the news, an article in the New York Times, July 22nd, promoting Reagan for a third term, and they said President Reagan has often advocated a change in the Constitution to allow the president to serve more than two terms. I told you when Warren Burger resigned as Chief Justice to take over the Constitution celebration, the anniversary of the Constitution, the two most dangerous things would be to change the Constitution to allow Ronald Reagan to run a third or a fourth term, and the other is to change it and have that foreign-born president of the United States, which would be Henry Kissinger. Now, many of you saw or didn't see the article this past week, Bechtel man chosen for new Pentagon post. And this is really interesting that Caspar Weinberger is from Bechtel Corporation and George Shultz is from Bechtel Corporation, and there's four or five other people high up in Washington in that corporation, closely linked. One of the directors was former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, John McCone, who was CIA director when Salvador Allende was murdered and they had the coup in Chile, and Bechtel is every bit a CIA Defense Department front, as well as a company that builds dams and factories, cement places, and construction all over the world. Now, the San Francisco Chronicle had a story, ignoring congressional objections, Ronald Reagan has nominated Richard P. Godwin for a post in the Defense Department. It was a newly created post as Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition. David Packard, the same David Packard from the Bohemian Grove, who was on the 40 Committee with Henry Kissinger, this prestigious national security decision-making group of five people of who lives and who dies. David Packard just did a study with the Defense Department and has strongly recommended that this man be in charge of all Pentagon purchases. I cite it because I don't think you have to look too far to see the massive tightening up of control in this country. The president having his finger over 40 or 50 of the federal judges, with Warren Burger working on the constitutional celebration, which will have some changes in it for sure, with Mr. Rehnquist, Judge Rehnquist, chairman of the bench, where he's not against martial law, and Mr. Packard of the Defense Department, and Hewlett Packard, that's the combined company, David Packard, recommending that all weapons be purchased through an agent of Bechtel Corporation. That means a control of where they go, who gets the contracts, how many there are, and it's a lot of information and power in the hands of this corporation, having the Secretary of State and the Secretary of Defense running the entire network of how we relate to other countries or deciding when we go to war. Speaking of Judge Rehnquist, Justice Rehnquist, there was an article in the San Francisco Chronicle this week, Why Justice Rehnquist Merits Confirmation, and it's written by Stanley Mosk, who's always passed himself off as somewhat of a liberal in California. He's on the Supreme Court in California. The interesting thing about Stanley Mosk is that years ago, when people were afraid of the John Birch Society and they were saying that General Eisenhower was a communist and they wanted to infiltrate all the boards of education, the schools, the textbooks, and the John Birch Society became very, very powerful and its members were able to get Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan in as president. In the early days when the Birch Society was working and operating in the early 60s, it was Stanley Mosk who said there's nothing to fear by the John Birch Society. They are a bunch of little old women in tennis shoes. That's where the quotation came from. Many of you are too young to remember it. Some of you do. Well, the Birch Society turned out to be very powerful, and now, unless he puts on his dress and is dressing as a man and is an old lady in tennis shoes, Mr. Rehnquist is a hardcore member of the John Birch Society, and he will be our new Chief Justice. The other point to remember is that Stanley Mosk also worked for the Warren Commission. His name is on the Warren Report, is one of the attorneys for the Warren Report, which was put together by Alan Dulles of the Central Intelligence Agency and John J. McCloy of the intelligence community, and he was an attorney hired by them to put together that document that was totally a farce. There have been hundreds of books written criticizing it and the errors and the inconsistencies. So why would somebody believe Stanley Mosk when they say that Mr. Rehnquist merits confirmation? Helmut Kohl requested today that there be freedom for Mr. Hess, Rudolf Hess, the oldest person residing in the Spandau prison, and he asked for it on humanitarian grounds. It's interesting that Helmut Kohl is requesting this, being as he pressured the president of the United States to go to Bitburg. If he didn't want the president to honor the graves of the Waffen SS, I wouldn't care what he says about Hess, and actually Hess isn't important, whether he's alive or dead or whether he's in or out Spandau, except that he has been a hero to people such as Larry McDonald, who, when he was alive, was pushing for Hess to get out. And also, besides Larry McDonald, a president of the John Birch Society, along with activities of Justice Rehnquist, pushing for this were the members of the Aryan Nation, those people that want to make the Northwest an all-white territorial balkanization plan of the United States. The Aryan Nations have been very close to Mr. Hess in talking about him and promoting him as a hero, as did Larry McDonald. So with Helmut Kohl, there are a lot of different diverse groups that have more in common than they seem to do, and I don't think it's him, but it's the symbolism of getting him out. Well, the fights to stop the first altered bacteria, genetically altered bacteria, are over. As of this Wednesday, they may begin in California to put these organisms out in potato plants in California. The court turned down the case that Jeremy Rifkin had filed, and so that is fait accompli. Now, what happens when the potato plants are sprayed? You won't know for 20 years when the bacteria is unleashed. People didn't know when the intelligence community was releasing bacteria in San Francisco in the harbor, and they didn't know when they had it on the subways in New York, and we don't know where they put their disease-causing bacteria, but we know there's more disease than ever, there's more cancer than ever, there's more sickness, And there's no way to pinpoint what they called tests with the passing out of bacteria that could cause, or viruses rather, that could cause disease. So the genetic engineering question is over because there's no way to prove for years how it leaps and jumps and how it infects the environment. There's an interesting story. Oh, I don't have time for this one. I was going to, well, real fast, the Washington Post has a story, New Front in War on Terrorism, Cultivating Foreign Opinion, and June the 19th. We made such a botch of bombing Libya and making mistakes that the administration is finally saying that we will cultivate asking our allies what we were doing because there was so much anger at what we did at Libya, and also the feeble excuse of the Berlin disco bombing. Later it turned out not to be Gaddafi, but Syria, and so they now have said, we will consult our allies before we do something like that. My time is up. I didn't think I had time for that one story. I'll continue with some of these next week. This is Mae Bressel. Take care, and I'll be with you next week.